returned languidly. "But war, is it glorious to break the peace of the world? That ignoble peace, it was no peace at all with that crime and shame at our very gates." She was conscious of parroting the current phrases of the newspapers, but it was no time to pick and choose her words. She must sacrifice anything to the high ideal she had for him, and after a good deal of rapid argument she ended with the climax, "But now it doesn't matter about the how or why. Since the war has come, all that is gone. There are no two sides any more. There is nothing now but our country." He sat with his eyes closed and his head leant back against the veranda, and he remarked with a vague smile, as if musing aloud, "Our country, right or wrong?" "Yes, right or wrong," she returned fervidly. "I'll go and get you some lemonade." She rose rustling and whisked away. When she came back with two tall glasses of clouded liquid on a tray and the ice clucking in them, he still sat as she had left him, and she said, as if there had been no interruption, "But there is no question of wrong in this case. I call it a sacred war, a war for liberty and humanity, if ever there was one, and I know you will see it just as I do yet." He took half the lemonade at a gulp, and he answered as he set the glass down, "I know you always have the highest ideal. When I differ from you, I ought to doubt myself." A generous sob rose in Editha's throat for the humility of a man so very nearly perfect who was willing to put himself below her. Besides, she felt more subliminally that he was never so near slipping through her fingers as when he took that meek way. "You shall not say that. Only for once I happen to be right." She seized his hand in her two hands and poured her soul from her eyes into his. "Don't you think so?" she entreated him. He released his hand and drank the rest of his lemonade, and she added, "Have mine, too," but he shook his head in answering, "I've no business to think so unless I act so, too." Her heart stopped a beat before it pulsed on with leaps that she felt in her neck. She had noticed that strange thing in men. They seemed to feel bound to do what they believed and not think a thing was finished when they said it, as girls did. She knew what was in his mind, but she pretended not, and she said, "Oh, I am not sure," and then faltered. He went on as if to himself, without apparently heeding her. "There's only one way of proving one's faith in a thing like this." She could not say that she understood, but she did understand. He went on again, "If I believed, if I felt as you do about the war, do you wish me to feel as you do?" Now she was really not sure, so she said, "George, I don't know what you mean." He seemed to muse away from her as before. "There is a sort of fascination in it. I suppose that at the bottom of his heart every man would like at times to have his courage tested to see how he would act."
"How can you talk in that ghastly way?"
"It is rather morbid. Still, that's what it comes to unless you're swept away by ambition or driven by conviction. I haven't the conviction or the ambition, and the other thing is what it comes to with me. I ought to have been a preacher after all. Then I couldn't have asked it of myself, as I must now I'm a lawyer. And you believe it's a holy war, Editha?" He suddenly addressed her. "Oh, I know you do, but you wish me to believe so, too?" She hardly knew whether he was mocking or not in the ironical way he always had with her plainer mind, but the only thing was to be outspoken with him.
"George, I wish you to believe whatever you think is true, at any and every cost. If I've tried to talk you into anything, I take it all back."
"Oh, I know that, Editha. I know how sincere you are and how... I wish I had your undoubting spirit. I'll think it over. I'd like to believe as you do, but I don't now. I don't indeed. It isn't this war alone, though this seems peculiarly wanton and needless, but it's every war. So stupid it makes me sick. Why shouldn't this thing have been settled reasonably?"
"Because," she said very throatily again, "God meant it to be war."
"You think it was God? Yes, I suppose that is what people will say.
Do you suppose it would have been war if God hadn't meant it?"
"I don't know. Sometimes it seems as if God had put this world into men's keeping to work it as they pleased."
"Now, George, that is blasphemy."
"Well, I won't blaspheme. I'll try to believe in your pocket providence," he said, and then he rose to go.
"Why don't you stay to dinner?"
Dinner at Balcom's Works was at 1 o'clock.
"I'll come back to supper.